Welcome to another edition of Tech Wrap, the podcast. We are online at our website at techwrap.net. You can email us anytime. The email address is simple. It's mail at techwrap.net. Plus, you can follow us on the social media channels. We have a Facebook page, Tech Wrap Australia, with Tech Wrap Podcast on Twitter. And of course, you can listen to this here podcast on iTunes. You can listen to it on player.fm and a whole plethora of other podcasting publishing platforms. Welcome again to another week's program, Will.
Thank you, as always. Good to be back. Been a busy week. This week's just flown by.
It has, not only in personal life.
Yeah, but work life as well. And I know you actually took a little bit of a break from the old work life to do something a little bit exciting.
Something out of the ordinary.
Road trip. Yeah. Tell us about that.
So the Volkswagen Experience, this idea came up in my inbox. They said, you're a valued customer, as in you've bought
a car
in the last 12 months or so. So, you know, we're going to give you a $100 discount on basically a driving day. So the idea is you head down to a location or up to a location, depending upon which place you've chose. I went to Phillip Island, of course. And
oh, lovely.
You learn some basic driving skills. So you learn about handling the car, being able to get it out of an awkward situation. Basically, what we were doing was throwing a Tiguan into a corner at full speed and being able to, I guess, feel the car keep itself stable and then steer out of it. We learnt braking.
That would have been a lot of fun.
We did, yeah. We learnt braking techniques. We learnt cornering techniques. And after all of that jazz, we put those skills that we got on the day together because they gave us a ride into golf vehicles, the Golf GTI and also the latest R Series. And we were essentially able to do two laps with nobody else in the car, just you. Yeah, just us and a pilot driver in front. So as long as we were keeping a fair distance between us and the pilot driver, we were able to floor the car and shoot around and enjoy the course. So we did about four laps in total. And at some stage, that video is actually going online on their website, I believe.
Oh,
so I'll be able to see all
of you?
Yeah, of me driving the car around.
Around the track? Did you get any? Did you get into any trouble?
No.
Did you slide out? Did you, you know, flip the car?
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
Those GTIs are zippy little beasts.
Oh, they are. They're
they
beautiful.
Got some go to them.
They are beautiful machines.
Sounds like you had a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I was doing? I was just sitting at home watching random YouTube videos and a particular live event.
Oh, yeah, there was a big mobile phone live event.
Yeah, it was the Galaxy Note 8 launch event that's been, you know, a lot of people have been waiting for on the 26th of August. Pretty much everything leaked before the event, everyone knew what it was about. But they're still cool to see what Samsung does and how they present their phone and the hype behind it. It was really cool because, as we all remember, last Note series, the Galaxy Note 7, battery exploded and
that was
stuff. And
the bang phone.
And stuff. Yeah, so I was kind of curious if they were actually going to ignore that altogether and hope everyone forgot about it. But during the actual presentation, you know how they do kind of like the big video monitors behind them and the intro and stuff. They had like, you know, very texty sort of stuff. And it's like they touched upon it and like they kind of made a big deal of it. Like it was along the lines of, we're sorry we disappointed you, but you pushed us to do better and strive to do better for you and thank you for being loyal to us and stuff. So they really kind of acknowledged what went wrong with the Note 7 and instead of just trying to hide it away. And even the head of Samsung guy that came out actually brought it up as well. So they didn't ignore it at all. They actually kind of confronted it, which was kind of cool, and said, look, this happened. We're not going to pretend like it didn't happen and we're going to strive to do better. And so that was kind of cool to actually acknowledge it.
You do understand the fact that they weren't able to ignore it at all, given the large-scale incident that it was and all the subsequent...
But, you know, they didn't need to bring it up at the press conference, like, you know, like to relive those memories. Maybe they're like, oh, let's just focus on the Note 8. Let's not even mention the Note 7.
But there is a good point in bringing it up. It points out that they have... I guess, worked out what they reckon they've done wrong with it all and can point out to the world that they're moving forward in positive ways.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess a bit of marketing tech, they had probably a whole marketing team behind them, right? Like, look, this will play a lot better if you acknowledge it and not ignore it and all this sort of stuff. But there are some cool new features with the Note 8. And do you know what is crazy? The Note 8 coming out, and I'm looking down at my phone. It's a Note 4.
Note 4. I hadn't even realised it was that old. Where are you, man?
How old is that? There's now four generations on top. But that's insane. I'm like, normally every 2 years I rotate, but I don't know what's happened to me. What's happened to me?
Well, I guess you haven't required something of a speedier nature. You haven't decided to be one of those people who upgrades every year. Hands up, Trent.
I used to be a 2-year upgrade cycle, but I don't know what happened. The time just flies, and maybe this is the time. Maybe now this is a new phone I'll upgrade to, the Galaxy Note 8. So here's some key features that kind of stood out to me and some features they also pushed during the event.
So on
the back now, they have two 16-megapixel cameras. Dual 16-megapixel cameras.
And that's where everyone's going with phones at the moment, I notice.
Yeah. One's a wide angle, more like your kind of standard phone camera that you might have, and then the second one's a 2x telephoto lens, so you can punch in without losing any quality.
Mm.
So you can take... And they also have this thing called live focus, which they push, which I think was kind of a gimmicky, because like even... We can do this in our camera apps now. It's like where you can blur the background, or like you go into a photo mode that blurs the background. It's pretty standard. I guess the difference there was in real time, you can adjust the amount of blur so you can see it before the photo is even taken. And then after you take the photo, you can go back and adjust the blur in real time because it takes two photos using both the cameras. So that was the kind of feature they pushed to get that bokeh, as they say in the camera photography world, that nice blurry background. So that was something they really pushed. Another thing up on the S8, they got a huge 60 gigabytes of RAM, which is like ridiculous to think of that isn't a smartphone. It's like more than most laptops, right?
Are you even serious? That
6 gig of RAM, yeah.
Yeah, wow. In a phone. One of my computers didn't even have that at one point in time.
No. I think my old laptop only has like 2, and even newish laptops today only have about 4. It's crazy. 6.3-inch display. It's only 0.1 more inches than the S8 Plus, I think. Yeah, S8 Plus is 6.2, so this is a 6.3-inch display. They got the whole infinity edge going with that slight curve, so it looks absolutely amazing and beautiful. So huge screen real estate for all your media consumption, things like that. Of course, the S Pen, every generation of the Note, they're going to have something improved with the S Pen. So they're like, oh, it's a finer tip. It's more pressure sensitive. It's the best writing experience ever. Like they say every year.
Yeah.
Updated S Pen sort of features in the software. One thing they pushed was this thing called Live Message, where you can essentially use the S Pen to write a message over text, or you can use it over an image or something. And there's various effects. So I can write, "Hi, Trent," and then it'll animate as I wrote it. It'll reanimate my handwriting, and I can add sparkles and glitter to it, and then it will package it to a GIF and then send it as like a GIF to your phone. So I guess an MMS, so it's universal. So
these are all silly advertising features.
No, this is, you're going to buy it. There's another software improvement called App Pair, so you can pair two apps at once, and you can open both apps like in multitasking windows. So you can open, say, like Google Maps and Spotify, right?
Yeah.
And the Google Maps will be on the top and you'll have Spotify on the bottom. So you can hit one button and it'll simultaneously launch both apps. That's kind of cool.
Oh, it could be handy.
Like, how often you'd use it? Because like the multitasking dual screen has been available for ages. It's just more convoluted to do, but I don't think anyone really, I've never used it.
No, I don't know too many people that have jumped into it before.
Yeah, and they're also producing like a dock they have called Dex, which I think you can also do with the S8 Plus, whatever, but you can do it with the Note. So it's like a standalone system that plugs into a monitor, mouse, and keyboard. So mouse, keyboard, monitor into the dock, and then you can, whatever you're doing on your phone, you just put it in the dock and it will seamlessly throw it up on the bigger monitor.
Mind you, Samsung isn't the only one to have done this in the last few years. Before, Microsoft threw in the towel. They were doing that with the Windows Phone.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, like, it's kind of like, yeah, who's going to use that? Yeah. Like, you know, who's going to buy this dock and
it's
have
a gimmick.
Whole separate system? Yeah, it's like a lot of these are a bit meh. Of course, Bixby, they pushed Bixby, proving, you know, more feature improvements with Bixby because it's always growing. We've talked about Bixby in the past.
We have,
in past
indeed.
Podcasts. We wrote an article on it. It's on the website, techwrap.net. Check it out. But the thing that they showed here that I hadn't seen before,
yep,
and that we hadn't talked about, you can program multiple commands to a custom voice line.
Make so more I can sense, say please. Something,
yeah, I can say so. I can say something to my phone that will trigger like a series of commands. So I can program my phone whenever I say good night to my phone. This is the example they used. So you can say good night to Bixby, and then Bixby will automatically set your alarm for whatever time you need to get up in the morning that you pre-programmed.
Yep.
It'll put your phone into do not disturb mode, and it will add a blue light filter for nighttime reading and things like that. So
well, that's
all,
a nice bit of
all you need to do is say good night to Bixby, and then it will do all those things. So that'd be kind of cool if you had like a string of things that you wanted to do in one go that you do very often. I can't really think of too many.
And
again,
you don't
it's
have
like
to,
who's going to use it?
And you don't have to activate it either, which is a great thing.
Yeah. So like, you know, and of course, you know, the CPU faster, the better hardware, better CPU, all that stuff that you'd expect every year.
All the
as
jazz
well.
You
but
get
those,
from most brands.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, as you say, and actually this is like going to be the most expensive Note phone ever. I think
what are they going up in price?
About yeah, it was like $1,000 US, right? And I think that by the time it hits us, it'll be like 1,400 or 1,500 Australian dollars on the pre-order.
Definitely,
like, is that not
the fleecing.
Insane? There's, and for like the features you get compared to say the S8 Plus, which I saw, if you're thrifty, you could get it for maybe about 800. 850 or something like that if you get like a gray import or something like that. So you probably get it for around 800 when the Note 8 launches and stuff. And considering a lot of this stuff is like S Pen, do you even use it? And then all these other gimmicky sort of features that you're never going to use, that's not worth essentially twice the price or a little bit under twice the price of an S8 Plus. So I'm like thinking, oh, I don't know, as much as I want it, is it worth it? Is
well,
it worth it?
I'm thinking it's a really questionable stance from Samsung, given what they've been through in the last 12 to 18 months. I mean, having an exploding phone, which has cost a company a considerable amount of money to be able to replace units for people. I guess they've kind of tried to revive the old phones that weren't blown up and sell them in a marketplace. And now they're trying to sell a new variant of the phone and charging much more than they previously have. They might be either maybe finding ways of reducing the cost on it overall to entice more people into it as time goes on, or, you know, they might actually be starting to lose some share with that sort of figure, perhaps.
Yeah, a little bit cheaper. They would have gotten people buying outright and stuff like this, but I guess you could do some bundles with...
you could throw things in, I suppose.
I mean, like, you know, with a network provider, you know, paying X amount per month like you do, it might not be too crazy, but then they tend to lock you in for like 2 years or 3 years even. I don't know. I just don't know.
What they tend to do these days so that people will still keep turning phones over is they'll do the whole allow you to be in a 24-month contract but allow you to upgrade after 12 months, which essentially means you rip up your previous contract and you start another 24-month contract, which, of course, doesn't change the fact that you're on a 24-month contract. But if you're happy with the idea of continuing with that provider and happy to pay that sort of money, well, you can continue to do it in that method. Or I suppose there is the Vodafone concept. What they're doing at the moment is allowing people to have brand new phones on contracts. But if you decide you don't want to be on the contract anymore, that's fine. You can cancel your phone contract and then you just pay what you owe the company for the phone handset and then you're out.
Yeah, so that's how they get you though. You pay what, like over $1,000 to get out?
Well, if the phone is pretty fresh, yeah, you probably would be.
When's the new iPhone? Shouldn't be too far away either, should it?
The iPhone launches are typically in the first couple of weeks of September. So, yeah, we'll be sitting here waiting for whatever goes on.
What are they up to now? Eight as well?
Well, yeah, I suppose so. If they call it an eight, that is. You know, there's speculation as well in the Apple camp, although sometimes you do have to question the legitimacy of, you know, the speculations from time to time, especially when they're usually just pictures of cases or pictures of possible displays. But, yeah, it shouldn't be all that far away. It never is all that far away.
Yeah, and I feel like they're going to be upping the, like, you know, that new iPhone's going to be around $1,000 too, I think. Is this where high-end phones are going now? Is this it? The increasing price now, $1,000 US, every new high-end phone. Some of these lower-end options are just getting more and more appealing, aren't they?
The lower-end options certainly are, and especially given the fact that they're getting really, really functional. Some of the stuff that they're offering over in countries like India, for instance, where, you know, the socio-economical rate is considerably different to our Western countries. You can get phones for less than a couple of $100, which are just as capable as some of the phones in the $500 to $1,000 range in terms of smartphone technology these days.
Yeah, what's that Chinese one, the Chinese company that does a lot of those cheap sort of phones, a tablet? Xiaomi, is it? Yeah, like I think I was reading somewhere that they're quickly becoming the most, you know, like the leading seller of phones now, just because of how cheaply they can produce them and how many people are buying them in China and even overseas. Very popular for like a good mid-range spec phone. I remember I bought a family member a new phone. It was about $250, and it was pretty much as good as my Note 4 is. And when I got that, it was $800, $900. And it's still a really good phone. That's why I haven't upgraded so far. And here I am buying something very similarly spec'd. Beautiful screen. It was like $250. And I'm just like, oh. And there's so many options now. So many options. So many manufacturers. These high-end phones, I don't know. You just got to have a pretty nice disposable income to pick them up straight off the bat, don't you?
Or you just end up getting them on a contract and being stuck with the payoff for a long time.
Put them on your credit card and worry about it in 3 months. Figure out. It's like you have 3 months to figure this out.
P.S.
What's been coming across your desk this week?
P.S. Be a responsible credit card user, please. Please. Hey, the ACCC hasn't been happy with all the complaints that it's been getting for the NBN. Hey, we're back to NBN again.
Complaints on NBN? No. Who's complaining about the NBN in Australia? No one.
And that is actually one of the sources of, for the most part, their complaints over the last 12 to 18 months. Because, you know, an NBN connection is not necessarily an NBN connection. You can be on all sorts of technology. You can be on all sorts of distances between node boxes. If you're on fiber to the node, the quality of your line can be a bit intermittent as well. And then, of course, you've got the service provider issues as well. And we had the business that advertising for NBN providers was getting a bit sketchy. We all talk about the back to the previous conversation of speed guarantees and the fact that, you know, you can buy a high speed connection and not get high speed throughput because, you know, X company might have a certain amount of bandwidth and they've managed to sign up more customers than they have bandwidth. ACCC is really starting to get sick of the complaints that they're getting of this scale and have basically drafted some guidelines that they're hoping that many internet service providers will, you know, look at accepting here in the country so that they can, redesign the way that they're selling their internet plans and give something that's a little bit more, realistic of speed targets and possible speeds that people can achieve, you know, all day round, rather than this idea that you could get this speed and most people don't in most cases.
Yeah, and I've actually, it's interesting you say that and interesting that that's been happening because I remember when we first switched over to the NBN and you'd look at the plans and it was 12.1, 25, 55, 50, 10, 50, 20. Or whatever it was, then 50, 20, and then what's the 100, 150, yeah. right? And that's how they'd advertise it. And now I'm just looking on TPG's website right now, and it's interesting to see that now they say standard download speeds, instead of saying the basic plan is the 12.1, which it was advertised when I signed up, they now say between 5 megabits per second and 12 megabits per second asterisks.
Which would suggest they're trying to cover themselves up a little bit.
Yeah, they're saying between you might get between these speeds rather than saying 12.1, 25.5, which is insane. And then the next plan up is between 5 megabits per second and 25 megabits per second. And then the other one is between 12 and 100. So that's interesting that you say that. And now these plans are advertised differently. So does that mean this is starting to happen already?
Perhaps people are already thinking about implementing it finding a way of doing it in a manner. Certainly, I suppose, a little bit more realistic if you say.
They don't even mention the upload speed here, by the way, either.
which I would hope you'd be mentioning. But then again, I guess you can't estimate that either. An example case in point is the connection that I put together for a not-for-profit. We're a few hundred metres from a node. We were on the 50-20 plan, which realistically, given the fact that our original speed on ADSL2 was about 15 down, that probably means you end up being 30-something. We ended up getting about 35 megabits down. And I think we're about 19 megabits up, so nowhere near that 50, but certainly happy to be on a connection which isn't capped for upload speeds, given the fact that we do, you know, we go outside and do broadcasts in the community, and, you know, you stream the radio station to people online as well.
Yeah, so and I think for a lot of people now, more and more upload is a thing, right? People uploading countless amounts of content, YouTube videos, big videos, people streaming themselves, playing video games, all this type of thing. Upload is very important. I think it's a thing a lot of ISPs don't really focus on and advertise a lot about, or people don't really think about. But yeah, I went to the critical information summary. I still couldn't even quickly find an upload estimate, which is very interesting. But you're right about the whole NBN thing. It's some ISPs are better than others. It's like so some NBN plans are just no quicker than the old ADSL2, and you're like, what is the point of this?
It's a big challenge, and it's certainly a big challenge for people who don't understand it.
And these are just recommendations, aren't they? Like, the ISPs really don't need to do anything if they didn't want to.
No, they don't necessarily have to. A lot of them are thinking about adopting it. I know the choice provider of mine, and this is no endorsement. They don't pay me or anything to say it. Aussie Broadband, just for the fact that the speeds on the connection that we've had so far have been pretty good. As soon as
they've been pretty vocal in the NBN community, haven't they? As well,
they have, and they came out again with the ACCC conversation and said, "Hey guys, we're accepting the fact that the ACCC wants to do this because we want to see this this environment here in the country where." People have got an actual idea of where they're going when they sign up their internet connection, and they're not just being, I guess, fooled by the sense of false advertising.
Yeah, it's really nice to actually have a service provider come out and sort of fight for the consumer and fight for better speeds and fight for less congestion and make a noise about it, because if they didn't, who was going to?
You know what it is?
No one else, right?
It's a smaller company that actually cares. Someone who has done the real toil through his life working in the industry, and of course he hasn't sold out and not keen to sell out to the bigger company. When they sell out to the bigger company, that's when they become ruthless and they're just there for the cash.
Hopefully the whole thing moves forward in a better direction. We get faster speeds and less congestion, and things are a lot more clearer for everyone, because the state of Australian internet has been in a pretty poor place for a long time, and it's going to take a long time to get out of it, and hopefully it's sooner than later.
Most definitely. I mean, it's,
do you know Uber?
It's really sad. Uber. Just one more thing. It's really sad.
I got excited.
When you do a speed test on your own internet connection, you're on ADSL2. Your speed is, it's okay, but you reckon it's not that great. And then the speed test website says faster than 60% of Australia.
Yeah, that's just, do you feel good or do you feel bad for Australia for that?
I feel bad for the rest of the country, the poor users that have got speed slower than I do on my ADSL connection. When I'm frustrated and I'm yelling at this thing all weekend. Anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, I took an Uber last night.
You did?
Yeah, and I asked the guy, I was like, hey, did you know Uber has a new CEO? And he had no idea.
Really?
Yeah. Because, I feel like there should be a pop-up in the app that comes out and gives drivers new information, because I wanted to talk to him all about it and he didn't even know anything about the company he was working for. Although, having said that, I looked at the guy's name and I have no idea how to say it.
Yes, you do.
Do you want to have a go? Dara Kosraushai.
No. Dara Karowski.
Yeah, so he was something with Expedia. I don't know if he was this previous CEO of Expedia or some high-level position with Expedia, and now he's been tapped on the shoulder to come head up Uber, which is very interesting. I don't know what sort of changes he's going to implement. Because remember, we've been talking about Uber controversies for a long time, ever since the inception of them.
Well, Uber's always had
drama, and
Uber's always had a lot of controversy because of the fact that they're shaking up the industries around them. That is a part of the thing. And the other thing, of course, you've got, teething problems caused by, behaviours of drivers and other sort of tactics that people are playing on the company, when they've found a little loophole, I guess.
Yeah, remember how we were talking about them increasing the surge pricing, doing elite, Uber drivers driving in areas they shouldn't be, all the fight with the taxi drivers, all this, and then not to mention all the stuff in other countries around the world. Mm. So it'd be interesting to see what he can bring to the table and sort of changes he can implement, and, Uber not maybe paying their drivers enough and or treating them as well as they should be. The whole Uber image is a weird one, because people in the know, or know about all this stuff, probably don't think too highly of Uber. But it's one of those things, because here in Australia, who else do you have? You have no other option. Uber's kind of the only ride-sharing service that's here, aside from taxis. In America, they have Lyft and maybe one other one that's competition that people can go to. So,
yeah,
I'm curious to see in the coming weeks and months, there's going to be news stories about implementing new plans and things like this and roll it out, and maybe he's going to try and save the face of Uber and turn it around so all the drivers love Uber again and everyone wants to drive for Uber and none of these other rival companies. So I'm sure we'll talk about that more in the future. But Uber, what are Uber doing in something at the moment currently?
Uber apparently in discussions here in our country, here in the state of New South Wales. And this is, alongside all of the other things that have been going on here in Australia. They've also been rolling out their service into airports where they previously haven't had access. And there's been big news stories about that as well, because the taxi drivers haven't been keen and they've been blockading and whatnot over time. But New South Government's, come along the concept of, let's not try and beat them in any form. Let's, get them on side and work on new things that we can do. And, of course, the services of trains and buses and trams and stuff like that, there's limitations in areas where they can go. And, of course, there's always some part of, suburbia that definitely isn't covered by traditional means of public transport. So they're at the table talking about the concept of, perhaps Uber populating more in areas where they're not currently served by transportation options, so they can be the link that provides the connection between suburbia and, say, the capital cities, for instance, which is a smart move, I think.
Yeah, and having kind of been travelling around Melbourne a little bit, I've kind of, if Ubers were a little bit cheaper, I'd be taking them everywhere as opposed to some public transport during peak hours and things. And like the tram is packed full and the trains are not really that nice. And you just pay a little bit more for an Uber. And especially, like you say, going out into the suburbs and things like this, you might be walking to, if you're just relying on public transport, you might be 20 minutes away from the nearest train station or something like that, and it would just make sense to just quickly call an Uber. So I'm glad that they're in talks with the New South Wales government to fill these gaps, and good on them for recognizing this and you know, coming together to make getting around the state a little bit more easier. It's interesting you say with the airports, because are they talking about getting in closer? Because I know whenever I went to airports, there's always like the taxis have first preference, and then if you want to do any ride sharing, you generally have to walk a little bit out of the airport.
Yeah, no, that's essentially
some other designated meeting zone.
Yeah, that's essentially what's happened. They've opened up in a few airports around the country access closer to the terminals for Uber drivers to pull up, which means they are competing with taxi drivers for the share. But they always were. It's just that you had to walk a little bit further away to be able to access it.
So do you think that'll, like, the people that were ordering the Ubers before, do you think the main reason was because they had to walk out of the airport, or maybe because they didn't really, is that really a thing?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that. I think taxi drivers will still have a certain percentage of their potential audience. There are people who don't feel comfortable with the idea of an Uber because they see stuff on the news and they think it might happen to them. So, you know, they're still always going to take the taxi. And those of us who didn't understand how to get an Uber, you know, outside of the airport in some sense, will be more comfortable now we can actually take one. I know my next trip to Adelaide won't be being confused about all the public transport options and knowing where I need to walk and ending up in a taxi. I'd actually much rather get in an Uber because it'll be cheaper to the city from the airport.
Yeah, having said that, actually, I flew to Adelaide and I remember it being quite the walk, because you couldn't order anywhere near the airport and it was a bit of a maze to even get out of it, wasn't it?
Well, even just to get normal public transport options, I would have happily caught a bus if I knew how to, but I looked around the airport and I couldn't see any particular signage which clearly indicated to me where to walk to and, you know, which buses would be on there and whatnot. So I just...
Yeah, no, you're definitely not the only one.
I ended up in a taxi because I just didn't know any better.
Exact same thing happened to me, but I eventually found the bus. But yeah, no, it was very confusing. We had to ask airport staff and another person, how are taxi prices these days? It's been a long time since I've caught a taxi. I don't know if you've caught one in a city recently-ish. Is it still the price is the main thing that gets people away from taxis?
I still believe so. I haven't taken one in a city for a while. The last few journeys where I have taken a vehicle, it's actually been an Uber, even late at night. But it's always certainly been pricing has been quite high, even in the regional centres that we live in. They're a bit challenging to go from one side of the city to the other.
I know a lot of the taxi, they have their own apps now as well, don't they, that you can call?
Yes, and it's about time they did.
Do they work similar, like the whole GPS pickup, or is it just an app that it just calls a taxi and you set the location?
I think it depends on the taxi operator, but they've been working towards the concept of having some sort of connectivity, a bit like what Uber's done, so that they can try and captivate some of the audience that might have been going towards an Uber instead. But, of course, I don't think they're ever going to beat Uber on pricing as long as it's not within a search
interesting.
Period.
Yeah, I'd be curious to actually try, while I'm spending some time in Melbourne, to take a taxi from one location to another, nothing too crazy, and then also do that with an Uber and sort of compare the two and do a bit of a write-up. What do you think?
Oh, it's a reasonable idea. I know I think someone covered off a similar sort of concept on the old Gizmodo recently? Website recently.
Well, recently? Oh, I'll just look at that then, save myself the time and money. We'll see you soon, Gizmodo.
There you go. Hey, we're TechWrap the podcast. We're online at techwrap.net. You can email mail at techwrap.net. let me try that again. mail@techwrap.net and give us a like. We're Tech Wrap Australia on Facebook.
Hey, Trent, do you ever find yourself posting online anonymously, maybe like a comment on a forum or on Reddit or something like
that? Is that a question or what?
Yeah, it's a question. Do you ever post not behind your own identity because you don't want people to know who you are?
I might try and make up a bit of an identity for the sake of sharing stuff that not hate-based, but, you know, it might be a little bit questionable in front of my name.
Yeah, someone sees it and maybe it's like people don't want to think that's from you. But in China now, we've talked about China in the past with the their VPN lockdown, no longer can get VPNs and something similar in Russia. Now they're moving forward to put in place a plan where Chinese internet users will no longer be able to post comments online anonymously. How crazy is that? So everything you post online, be it social media or comments to news stories, all needs to be tied and linked to your phone number and the real ID so they can identify each individual and know exactly who's saying what.
So what, they've just got sick of people sharing questionable stuff online or doing negative things online?
They say the reason behind it is people posting comments and, you know, maybe like comments and propaganda to news stories. So they'll put out a news story and say, this is the way it is. And then maybe someone will post anonymously in the comments and then try to flip the story or go, hey, this isn't right. This is the actual truth. And then people are reading those comments and like, oh, I don't know what to believe now. Is this the real truth or is that the real truth? They're like, we don't want people doing that. And now even to post a comment to any sort of news story, it has to go through a moderation process that people, that your comments need to be pre-approved. And then even then that when they're pre-approved, everyone posting these comments is known to the government. Is this a good idea? Is this like a, does this make people restrict freedoms? People feel like they can't say what they really want to say because, you know, it might come back to bite them in the ass later down.
I've got a feeling there would be a segment of the community that would think, well, I'm not going to be able to say things without the government stepping in and the government having full control on what I say when I say it online. You know, the fact my free speech is now gone because I have to post in a known profile and someone can check it before I even put it online.
It's a scary thing, and it's like it's in China, okay, and then you think, oh, that'll never happen to us. You know, we'll always have the freedom to do this kind of thing. But you see more and more, anytime you sign up to a forum or a website or anything like that, you know, instead of the old school sign-up process, you can sign up via Facebook or your Gmail account. Mm. And if you use Facebook, that's instantly ties it to you and creates it to you. So slowly, even though China's like hard implemented that sort of real identity behind online signups, the way they've kind of designed signups now, it's kind of like a soft implementation almost, because unless you go out of your way, and normally the create accounts low down the bottom and it's out of your way, it's a lot, you have the big Facebook icon, it's so much easier to one click it, right, and you instantly got an account. So maybe people these days, even now, are creating accounts and posting behind their real name, and they kind of, I guess, hadn't really thought about it too much. And even like Facebook, you are anyway, Twitter, everyone using their real name now and things like this. So I guess it's such a small minority that do this sort of like bad stuff anonymously. And I think, oh, yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think stuff's going to go on in the world no matter what way we try and implement things. People always find a way of getting around something, and there's always someone who wants to share their opinion, you know, not in their own public profile. I think it's always going to continue to be a battle, and I think, you know, China's always going to have the restrictions. We might have more controls on what we can do on our internet connection, especially given recent cases with, pirated content websites starting to get blocked.
Yes.
There'll be a little bit more moderation involved, but they can't essentially block our free speech if it's fair and valid conversation and it's, you know, not illegal or completely hate-based, I guess.
Yeah, I'm just glad we don't live in China. They have such a hard time over there.
I couldn't hack
things and information.
I couldn't hack being online in China, I don't think.
That'd be so, yeah, no, not cool. It seems like when we were younger, right, and the internet first was sort of around, it's just looking back how it is now and how it was back then, it definitely seemed a lot more open and free. It seems like slowly and slow, like super slow incrementally, it's getting sort of more restricted and controlled. Like, you remember back in the day, like, you could do anything you wanted.
Yeah,
you
but
could access anything you wanted.
There was also limitations in what you could do back then. I know when I first started on the internet as a young primary school student, 56K modems weren't even in existence then. And, you know, an internet web page looked like something that you crafted in your My First Web Page application. They looked really amateurish back then, but look what you can do now.
It's like a trade-off. It's like a trade-off, isn't it, I guess? Like, yeah, the internet has come a long way, but it, in terms of when you look at the privacy thing and freedom of speech and control over what we can and can't see by governments and stuff, it does seem sort of a little bit more encroached upon than it once was. But I hope it doesn't. I know there are a lot of people out there fighting for internet freedom and net neutrality and all this sort of stuff. So hopefully, you know, we can hold it off to some extent and not sort of just clouding around us to the point where we are China and Russia.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of controls that you should exercise. I mean, free speech does have limitations. You can't be hateful online, and, you know, you also can't do something which is going to, I guess, you know, limit people being able to get involved and potentially as well, you know, causing damage to people's computers. They're kind of things that you don't want going on, and you'd like a government or someone, you know, high up to actually exercise a control. But apart from that, you know, we should access our other content freely, and we should be able to say some things online without moderation and without someone looking over our shoulder as we type it.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. And I guess we'll look back in 10 years when we're at episode 1742, how the state of the internet, we can reflect back upon this podcast in 10 years to the day, and we'll see where the internet's at. Well, there were kind of the bigger news stories of the week that came across our desk. Sometimes there are those little news headlines, those little tidbits of information where the story is in the headline. And it's a little segment we call Quick Headlines of the Week. And we have a theme song and everything, and we will work on that one day. But in the meantime, it goes something like this. These are the technology headlines of the week. These are the quick headlines of the week. Geddes, give me some quick headlines. Hey, do you know it's how annoying is it when you go to websites and then just some random music plays or random video plays and it's hidden in the top left or the top right? You have to click something, you have to find something. It drives you insane. You just want to close the tab immediately, but there's something on the page you want to read. Oh, and it's infuriating.
You know, well, I just soon, get off that website because I don't put up with that crap.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, yeah, I guess. But hey, you won't have to do that anymore once the new Google Chrome update comes out. It's currently a feature in the Canary build, which is like the super, super dev preview build. Mm. But eventually it will find its way into the stable build. You'll be able to mute websites in Google Chrome, which is really cool. Now, I know you can sort of do that with the microphone. You can see which tab has it. But when you close that tab, it doesn't remember that. So this update, you can permanently forever mute a specific website from playing any audio.
Delightful.
Visit later. Yeah, can't wait for that. Because I actually visited a page earlier just before this podcast and that happened to me and it infuriated me and I almost cried.
Now, you know something I want gone in Chrome already? Those annoying little pop-up boxes that come from websites that seem to be allowing themselves to post. Oh, I get heaps of them from YouTube, and I've had all sorts of other third-party websites pushing them, and I've just had to find the option and say, no, I don't want this stuff. This stuff should not be on by default.
Yeah, it sucks you have to go out for it. Maybe you need like some add-on or extension into Chrome that stops that from happening.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Here's a bit of music news, and we'll tie it in with streaming media services. It's a bit of irony for the artist Taylor Swift. Now, you might remember a few years ago that she wasn't keen on the streaming platform. She was one of the many artists who said, you know, we're not getting the profit we want from this sort of stuff, so we don't want this. Her single, which she dropped last week, was played more than 8 million times worldwide in its first day, breaking any previous records that Spotify had for a new song on the streaming platform. From the girl who didn't want to be on Spotify a couple of years ago. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I still think that was all like a big publicity stunt. But hey.
But there's been a lot of artists that have done it, though.
Not wanting to be on streaming services.
Yeah, and then not wanting to be on streaming services. A fine example of someone who just jumped on board recently is Bob Seger, an older musician, but you couldn't find any of his major repertoire on Spotify, and then a month or so ago he jumped on board because he realised he was missing a segment of the audience.
Yeah, I mean, it's in this day and age, everyone should be releasing all their music on streaming services. Otherwise, they're just missing out on a huge chunk of potential revenue. This is a fun one because, you know, we love drones here, and it's no secret. And if you listen to the podcast more than once, we'll talk about drones in some way or another, and we love talking about drones. Shark detecting drones take to the skies in Australia.
Are these going to actually be beneficial?
Shark detecting drones. So apparently we've released a fleet of drones to patrol our shores, or we are rolling out in the next month or so. Don't ask me whereabouts they're rolling out this stuff, but apparently these drones fly over water and they have AI inside them that can distinguish sharks from boats and other, I guess, people swimming, you should hope so. You could detect a surfer versus a shark and a boat or other sort of marine life that isn't dangerous. I assume somewhere around Sydney, possibly, like over Bondi, would probably be my sort of guess. Humans are only able to detect sharks with, say, 20 to 30% accuracy, and they reckon their drone-based system can do it with 90% accuracy.
Now, the one thing I have to question is, I wonder how long these drones are going to actually last when they're put up in the air before an operator has to, I guess, collect them from a spot, change the batteries and throw them up again. Like, that would be a full-time job.
How does that work? Is there actual live people monitoring these drones? I think I said there's something inside the drone that might release a noise or a siren or something when they detect a shark near people to scare people, or if it alerts a lifeguard, I would assume. But I guess it'd be rolled out the popular beaches like Bondi, and instead of having your lifeguards all watching the beach or whatever on Shark Watch or looking at tides and things, maybe they have one member dedicated on drones and he gets to fly the drone over the water, or maybe it's an automated flight path actually over the water and the software does all the work and it will alert them if they see a shark. And I guess maybe all you have to do is change the battery and it comes back and send it back in the air. But that's kind of cool though, like drone detecting, shark detecting drones.
This definitely could pay off given the human eye doesn't manage to do it as well.
There's actually like a little video of it, and we might tweet it out so everyone can see it. And I'll send it to you after. It's actually very interesting to see the AI detect the sharks in the water compared to a surfer. But that's it. Unless you have one more.
I've got one more.
Yes.
It surrounds the fact that everybody thought that the new technology would phase out the old technology. It happened with records, but records had a resurgence. You know, CDs have declined a little bit. When radio came out, people thought, when TV came out, radio people thought maybe our industry is a bit dead. The book industry is
video
not...
killed the radio show. Isn't that a thing?
Nice lyrics, mate. Nice singing.
That's how it went.
Have you ever thought about going to do some karaoke?
Between that and quick headlines, I think I should be up there with Taylor Swift getting all those millions of hits on Spotify.
Anyway, back to what I was saying. E-book revenues have continued to decline. People thought that e-books and e-book readers were the place to be. It was what people were going to be doing, but, you know, the interest has started to fade. And, you know, they've got a select audience. This is based on research that's been done over in the UK and also America as well. They've had a 5.3% drop in sales in the first quarter of 2017 and that adds on top of the declines that they've already had in the last 12 to 18 months, which I have previously discussed amongst my tech conversations. And it's certainly been a bit of an eye-opener because that's where people thought, you know, reading was going. But obviously, there's still people out there like me who like to read on paper, find it a bit hard to read on the old screen when you've been stuck in front of screens all damn day at work.
Yeah. And I think you're in the majority for sure. I could never get into e-books. I don't think I've... Oh, actually, there might have been one book I might have read on a PDF on my monitor, but a long time ago. But I, as a whole, I can't. I don't have a tablet. I don't have a Kindle reader. I have a tablet, but I don't read on it. I don't dedicated reading. To, yeah, I just you can't do it long time on a screen, and no one. Kids, okay, here's the thing. People that read books, traditional books, a bit of the older generation, I guess, that grew up reading books and things like this, maybe when technology wasn't around, they're going to prefer a book regardless of the fact. And then the new generation, they don't read anything. They just watch YouTube videos all day.
Well, they so do like I do.
E-books are in decline.
I just look at websites and listen to music and stuff.
Yeah, like it's like a lot of younger kids. If they are, they're reading paper books. But, I don't really meet too many people that has a huge ebook library. So that news doesn't surprise me at all. Have you ever read an ebook cover to cover to say?
No. No, yeah. Straight out no.
So there you go. Never. Not even tried?
I've tried, but I didn't get very far.
You just can't do it. Yeah, it's just it's sore in your eyes and it's just no good and you don't want to read it. It's not motivating. And
I already have glasses. Actually,
you don't need the stronger ones.
No, no.
One quick last one that I mentioned to you a little bit earlier, just because you use an Apple phone and I'm trying to get you out of Android, so this might do it slowly, is the Google Assistant for iOS is rolling out in Europe, the UK and Germany and France, and I think it'll expand into US later this year.
To.
So you know, you need to get rid of Siri and you can come over to the Google Voice Assistant and you can slowly come over and see how powerful and amazing Android is, and then maybe next year we'll get you a Note 9. Hey, what do they do when they get to Note 10s and 11s? Are they still going to go like that, do you reckon? Are you coming to Android?
I tell you, I'm not ready for Android handsets yet, but I do like a bit of the Google Assistant. The Google Assistant could certainly come in handy. Seems to be a little bit more reliable sometimes than Siri, when Siri wants to be a bit temperamental.
That's it. Those are the quick headlines of the week. What are you up to this week? Anything exciting? Driving any more cars? Flying any more planes? Skydiving? Maybe you got to up the ante now. You went around racetracks driving cars. You got to do something even more exciting this week.
Nothing exciting this week.
Naked horseback riding through the forest.
Hey, sailor.
No, I'll see what happens. Just go with the flow.
I will be going up north in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh, that sounds
work fun. Trip!
Oh, I love a good work trip. Get away, have some food and maybe a sneaky beer on the old company credit card.
Possibly. Not on TechRap's credit card, though.
We don't have one. Maybe one day.
Maybe. Hey, that is TechRap, the podcast. We're online at techrap.net. Like us on Facebook already. We're on there. We got a few followers, I notice.
Oh, quite a few. Growing every day.
TechRap Australia is where you find us, and you can find us, of course, on all the various podcasting platforms. Download a great little app for your phone, and you can listen to us anywhere, anytime. Anyway, that's enough of me. Thanks for
that's
the pleasure of being in
always.
Your company for another week.
Always. We'll see you next week.
Indeed.